Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Inside Lines podcast. I'm your host, Atoya Burleson.
And I am Tia Averill.
Coming up a bit later in the show, we'll be chatting with Emmy award-winning host and producer Amina Jade. We'll also be getting into our hot take this week, where we'll be discussing Grammy award-winning singer Kelly Rowland and her interview from the radio show Ebro in the Morning. But first, Tia, how was your weekend?
My weekend was good. I did a quick girls weekend to Houston. Let's just say leading up to said trip, I canceled it about 7 times, including the night before. and then I woke up that morning like, you know what? I'm going. I'm going to get this stuff done and go. So it was good. Got to hang out with some friends, ate some good food because y'all know Houston. Actually, they know how to season and give you food for the soul kind of thing.
Yes, but they do.
Yeah, but I will say, especially yesterday, I drank from the time I woke up to the time I went to sleep, like started with mimosas and finished with espresso martinis.
Mm.
Let's just say, like I told y'all before, we getting old, okay?
And it takes a minute
to recover. Right.
Yeah. We'll see you in a week, Tia. Good night.
Legit. What about you? How was your weekend?
My weekend was low key, no sports, just family time. It was good, nice and relaxing. I cannot complain. I needed more of that in my life, so it was good.
And that is true. So when does basketball season start up for the boys?
Girl, tryouts are tomorrow. So here we go. So look, I enjoy my weekend because I know it's about to get crazy again. But just sometimes you need those moments of just stillness and you realize like just replenishing yourself for a couple of days makes the biggest difference in the world.
Absolutely. Okay, I do have a completely separate sidebar, a question.
Okay.
So I know your baby is like on college tours and doing the whole thing, right? Mm-hmm. Like prepping for this next chapter.
Yes.
And I was talking to a few collegiate coaches just about the whole NIL situation. And I've, you know, been hearing just like conversations like, oh, some kids like they're not even entertaining certain schools unless it's a certain dollar amount, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Right. How have you guys been approaching that conversation with Lil Nate just about using his image and likeness, what he needs to look for in a school and stuff like that?
You know, it's funny. We just had that conversation this weekend and just explaining to him how it works and kind of what it looks like. But for him, you know, we actually are going on a recruiting trip here in a little bit, in like a week and a half or so. But for him, I told him to let us handle that. We'll take care of that for him. If there's something specific that he wants and or needs, of course, he can communicate that to us and we will take care of it. But I want him to just be a college student and leave that side of the business to us. Because although there are a lot of different opportunities out there, he may not know how to navigate that world yet. So giving him the opportunities to navigate it from our perspective is important. And also giving him the voice to kind of, if he sees something that he's kind of interested in and wants to do, of course, we're here for it. But we're just trying to take over that for him for right now and just allow him to, you know, enjoy his senior year and go into college, just ready to be a student athlete. So,
Good. We'll have to have someone on just to like continue diving into the NIL. But I like that, of course, Nate has this experience. He knows what to look for. And it's interesting that a lot of the kids that have been introduced to this whole NIL realm, they don't necessarily have that, you know? So that'll prove to be a difference maker for real when you start thinking about what they have to concentrate on.
It definitely is. And there's some great things out there. I just think that it's a lot for a kid. So making sure the parents are kind of well-versed and they know what's going on and what to ask, what questions to ask is so important. So, you know, he trusts us. And so he's like, I know, y'all got it. So he's excited for this next chapter. And he knows that he's in good hands.
I know that's right.
All right. Enough about that. Let's get into this week's hot takes.
Switching it up a little bit. It's time for this week's hot takes. Atoya, what we got?
Yes. Okay, so earlier in the week, I don't know if you know, but Kelly Rowland and Marseille Martin, they appeared on the Ebro in the morning show to discuss their new movie, Fantasy Football. And I have to do like a little shout out because Nate's actually in that movie. So y'all check out Fantasy Football when it comes out. Yeah, he has a little, just a little something in there. Y'all see it coming up.
A little cameo.
Yes, but during the conversation, nice. Rosenberg, he remarked to Kelly that, you know, her being in Destiny Child, you know, how was it always sitting next to the brightest light on the planet and, you know, always being second fiddle to her? And I just love Kelly Rowland because she gracefully shut him down. And she just said, here's the thing. She said, light attracts light and I am light. She said, I am a beautiful brown shining light. So I don't think anybody's light dims anyone else's. I think that when other people start to compare you, that's when it shows how dim they are of themselves. And when I say she said that so gracefully and Marseille was sitting there like, I was so excited to hear her let him know that, listen, we don't compare, you know, each other. Like, we don't do that. We don't play the jealousy fiddle. There's no light brighter than the other. And I'm okay in my space of who I am. You're the problem, not me. And I really love that because a lot of women struggle with that. They struggle with, you know, another woman and their light and how they shine and how it reflects on them, right? And, you know, and they also play into the idea of someone else telling you that you are less than this person or she is better or she's brighter or she's this. And Kelly's like, no, light reflects light. This is who I am. I stand in my light and my truth. And I absolutely was here for it. And there were so many people that came from him, from Rosenberg that Rosenberg had to get online and apologize. Tell me what you think about that.
Well, you know, it's interesting because here Kelly is 40 plus now, so she has moved through the feeling, right? But exactly what he said she once felt. And I remember her talking about how she did kind of play into what everybody else was putting into her head, just in terms of like her being in the background of Beyonce and how that kind of made her a little like isolated. Cause she had slowed down, you know, I wouldn't say stopped talking to, but just kind of like decreased that relationship that she had with Beyonce and how it took a negative toll on her. So I am glad that now, like today, she has moved through that. And to your point, like she knows, like, yo, I'm not playing second fiddle to anybody. Like Beyonce's dope. I love my sister. She's been doing great things, but I'm also dope. Like, let's not get it twisted, you know? So I definitely appreciate that. And it's interesting because I feel like people do this more with women, like not to say that it never happens with men, but they do it more with women, just like putting women against themselves. So even I'm glad that Kelly is in a more stable position. But what if she wasn't? Right.
Yeah.
Like what if she was having a moment of weakness and was doubting herself, like how this continues to drill and knock down people's confidence in that space. So I don't understand. And even when she was responding, Peter was not getting clues. Okay. He was not catching on. And she's like,
on a struggle bus.
Yo, let's move on for this. Yeah. But I know you said that he apologized. I didn't see his apology.
He did. He apologized and realized like, okay, I was doing too much there. But you think about the women, you know, whether you're whatever space that you're in life, there are these comparisons that happen. There are these women that think that they're more than or you're less than. Even in the NFL, you see it. You know, you see different women that kind of struggle and go through that. And so I do think it's important for women to let go of that comparison and let go of that, let me see what she has. Let me see what I have. Let me see what she's wearing. Let me see what I'm wearing. Let me see, you know, how her makeup or her hair looks and what shoes, you know, she's wearing. Let me see what I'm wearing. Like, and just genuinely allow people's light to shine for who they are and you do the same. Because that's when you really form authentic relationships. Like that to me, I think when you step into that, authentically you find those type of relationships.
Yeah, and you truly get to a space where you completely understand that there's room for everybody to be in that space, right?
Yes,
like,
absolutely.
Like Beyonce can be this dope, amazing singer and all these things, and I can also do and be the same. And it, and we're not less than the other person. So,
yeah. And who are you to tell me that I'm less than or she's more than, right? You can't tell me that. Yeah. I know who I am. I know my worth.
Yep.
Your opinion of who I am does not alter what I feel and how I think of myself. So, so yeah, I was proud of her. I'm like, shine, Kelly, shine, girl. All right, that's enough with this week's hot take. Coming up next is our conversation with Amina Jade. On the show today, we have an award-winning host, brand ambassador, and producer. She has worked for networks such as the Big Ten Network, WCIU Chicago, and BET, to name a few. She is the wife of Kansas City Chiefs safety Deion Bush and is currently the host of NBC Sports Boston. Please welcome to the show, Amina Jade. How are you?
I'm good. I love the intro. I'm here for it. Every time I hear an Emmy Award winning, I'm just like, yes, girl, you did that. You did that. That's what you did.
Listen, that is amazing.
Let's talk about your busy career in the world of television. You have literally done it all. And I know all about that world because my husband, Nate, is in it. So I get the crazy side of it. I get all that most people don't know. Let's talk about how you got your start in television and what enticed you to go there.
So I got my start in television in real life when I graduated college. I was actually at home for about 3 months. I was interning at Global Grind for Russell Simmons in New York City for no pay, y'all. Just $0.
That intern life?
the true intern life, because you know the interns now ain't doing nothing for free.
I'm just saying, because they trying to get paid now. But yeah, which is, I'm fine with it. I mean, get your coins, because we got to live. But yeah, I was interning at Global Grind in New York City. I was still at home, and I was applying to jobs, like, literally all over the country. And long story short, I had like three small stations get back to me, and Lawrence, Kansas won in the raffle to get me. And I remember I couldn't really point out Lawrence, Kansas on a map, and then trying to explain to my mom, you know,
she my got family, a fly into.
Yeah, like my mom, I'm just like, yeah, you know, I got a job in Lawrence. She's like, where the hell is that? She was like, where is that? My family's from Barbados. So my mom, she spent like her early years in Barbados, but then, you know, moved to Canada and came to the U.S. So she spent a lot of her like teenage and adult years in the U.S. And so all my family knows is like work, you know, 9 to 5, like they've been trying to obviously like, you know, create a better life for, you know, me and my cousins and my brother and everybody. So, you know, I tell my mom I want to do journalism. I go out to Kansas. She's like, I don't know about that. She's like, you sure about that? Yeah. She's like, yo, I'm going to do something else. Like, I mean, that sounds a little sketchy. So I told my mom, I was like, well, I'm getting in the car anyway, and I'm going to go. I'm going to drive from New York to Kansas. And like, if you want to come with me, you can come with me. If not, you know, I'm still going to go anyway. So that's the story behind that. So I get my start in Lawrence, Kansas, stay there for about 2 years. And then my husband, my now husband, Deion, he got drafted to the Chicago Bears. And so at that time in 2016, I was like, peace out, y'all. I'm leaving. I was like, I'm not staying here longer than I need to.
I love it. How did you meet your husband?
We were in college at the University of Miami. You know, I had transferred from the University of South Carolina. I was running track at Carolina. And then the story of me getting to Miami is actually funny. My teammate, she took me to Miami on spring break, and I just never came back. So
real talk. That's what I was just going to say to you. I'm like, so were you really in college in Miami? Let's talk about it.
She took me on spring break, and I was like, y'all, I mean, I love Carolina, but I think Miami is where I need to be. So I ended up transferring, went down there, and me and Deion.
Did you run track there too?
No, I stopped. I ended up just like focusing on my major. And I think that's a whole nother conversation, because I think a lot of people don't realize that when you are a student athlete, you don't spend a lot of time figuring out what you want to do in real life. And so I had to have a real conversation with myself. I'm like, okay, you know, am I going to go to the Olympics? Am I going to make money, you know, after school doing this? Or am I going to be struggling trying to find a job and figuring out who I am outside of track? And I think a lot of people don't understand that as a student athlete, you know, you spend so much time, you know, dedicating yourself to this craft. And then when it's gone, because it becomes your identity. Like being a track girl, that was my identity. That's how people knew me on campus. Like, that's how people knew me on campus. Like my whole life, like my friends, like, oh no, she can't go. She got track practice. Oh no, she can't go. She got to meet. And so that was a real hard conversation that I had to have with myself and figure out, okay, like, what is it that you are passionate about? What do you want to do? What are you good at that's going to help you make money? Like, how can you pour into something else? Like, how you pour into track and be successful at that? Yes. And that's how I ended up at journalism.
Okay. You know, that's what ticks me off about the people that are opposed to the whole NIL situation is because they're using the excuse like, well, these kids are getting a $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 scholarship to go do this. Expense, though?
Right.
Like, at what expense? But to your point, like, because that sport, they don't even give you the space to do it. My husband started off in engineering when he came to Purdue. I don't know why he thought he could do engineering
and football. Ambitious.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Right. But it's like, he got there, he was like, I can't do this shit. But people can grasp it. But
it's so true. What events did you do in track?
I ran the 8th, the mile, and cross country. So all Nobody wants to do.
No, you didn't. Anything over the 4 is unacceptable in my opinion.
I know. Like, I'm telling you, and it's so crazy because my whole family runs track. Like, my grandmother, she was a high jumper. My mom, at the time, she ran like the 220 when it was a 220.
Yeah.
She was a hurdler. You know, I was like the eyeball that like ran the 8th, the mile, and cross country. My brother right now, he runs at Arkansas. Like, he's like, he has all these accolades in the SEC. He's a hurdler. 100 meter hurdler, and he went to the Olympic trials and everything. I'm like, dang, why can't I do something short? Why did that skip over me?
I don't think I met too many black people that did either of those events.
Right? We was like, oh, we can get to the finish line faster just running one lap. Cool. Right. Say less. That's it. That's all you're getting. I'm not crossing that line more than once. That's it.
I wish. And then my coach would put me in the 400 sometimes, and I'd be like, you know what, child? That's just, it's not my ministry. I can't do it. It's not my ministry. I'm going to just, let me go ahead and run cross country. Let me go ahead and run this mile. I could run a good mile now. But put me in a 400, 200, no thank you.
I was polar opposite. Put me in anything over the 4, I'm like, nah, this is torture. Like, I done seen this line twice. Why am I seeing these people again? Like, this is too much.
It's like, the good old days. The laps till I am done.
Oh, man. Mm-mm-mm. Well, I'm so proud that you even recognized and realized, you know, in real time as an athlete, as a student athlete, trying to figure it out, like, is this going to pay the bills? What can I do that's going to help me in my future, that's going to benefit me in my future? And so you made that switch. So when you made that switch, did you run when you got to Miami? Did you decide to keep running, or were you like, that's it?
I had actually thought about it because I had a couple of friends that were on the track team down in Miami. Mm-hmm. And actually one of my closest friends, like, to this day, I remember I had called her up and she was like, girl, they giving out money. She's like, sis, you going to get the money if you come down here. She's like, girl, they giving out some money. And I thought about it to myself because I actually sat out my sophomore year in South Carolina because at the time, I think it's still a rule now, but I'm not sure. But yeah, you couldn't compete. Especially if you were, you know, going down to compete in Miami, it was like you couldn't compete like the next year. So you had to take a year off and then compete your junior year. So that's why I had taken off my sophomore year, because I was like, okay, maybe I might feel different after my sophomore year, so I'll still train. And then, y'all, I'm not going to lie, I got down there and I was like, ain't nobody trying to wake up at no 5 o'clock. I was like, I'm not trying to do no 6 a.m. weights. I was like, I don't want to go to practice at 3. I don't want to go to practice at 2 at 9 a.m. Right. And then study hall. And I said, you know what? I said, no. I said, I done enjoyed the good life a little bit too much.
Yes! It's true. I swear to God, my coach, he purposely worked us extra hard because he knew we went out the night before. So when we had to come in early, he was like, oh, I'm going to get you. I'm going to make y'all throw up. I'm going to teach y'all.
Man, look. I was just like, look, I started taking classes that were just a little bit later. My schedule's a little bit lighter. I got more time to actually like study and do stuff. I said, wait, I can hang out with my friends on the weekend? Yes. I said, but wait a minute. I said, y'all living the life.
We need a balance here.
Right? I was like, y'all are living the life. So I end up, once I got to Miami, you know, I just decided it was, and honestly, it was really hard. It was a tough decision for me because just like I said before, you know, your whole life. Like, I've been running since I was 5 years old. Yeah. Like, and I mean, I've been to nationals, I've been to regionals, mm-hmm. I done traveled all over running track, all over the country growing uh-huh. up. And so that's all I knew. And so yeah. I was nervous. I was scared. I was like, oh my gosh, like if I don't run track, like what am I going to do with my time? Like, you know, yeah. like mm-hmm. what extracurricular activities should I be doing? And then that's when I started doing student media. So I started covering uh-huh. football, started covering basketball, started writing for the uh-huh. paper, started doing radio shows, just trying to figure out, you know, what it mm-hmm. is that I wanted to do, what made me feel good, like what made me feel mm-hmm. fulfilled as I mm-hmm. did, you know, when I was running track. And so, you know, it is, when I look back at it, it is a very unique situation because you don't have a mm-hmm. lot of student athletes that have that real conversation with themselves. And yeah, I have yeah. a lot of friends that, you know, that ran track that, you know, after school or played sports, whatever it was, basketball, football, track. And after they graduated, because that was their identity, they were just like, mm-hmm. I don't know what to do.
What to
like,
do.
Yeah, I'm yeah. like, what job do I apply to? Like, what's an internship? Yeah. And it's yeah. hard to get an internship after you graduate. Yeah.
Listen.
Because it's, you know, it's tough.
Yeah. Yeah. And yeah. you have so many people telling you all the time when to wake up, what to do, when to do mm-hmm. it. So you have to create that regimen for yourself. And a lot of people mm-hmm. struggle with that. They don't know yeah. where to start. Yeah. So that is a great point that you brought up.
And it's the same situation with when you think about our significant others and as they start to retire, whether yep. it's on their own cognizant or not, yeah. like a lot of guys don't think about what is going to happen afterwards, right?
Yeah.
Like you still got a lot of life to live.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't know who you are other than mm-hmm. being a professional athlete.
Yeah. And so I feel true. Like now that conversation is happening, like, among like professional athletes that like, they're starting to figure out, okay, like I got to build a brand. Mm-hmm. I got to build something outside of like basketball, yes. football, whatever it is that I play so mm-hmm. that I still have value. I still use this platform that I have that I built, you know, mm-hmm. playing a sport that I can use it and pivot to something else. And I think so that's good. Really important because a lot of, you know, again, like I said, a lot of guys, a lot of girls, they don't think about that. And especially yeah. when you have, you know, an opportunity to be a part of that 1%, less than 1% playing in the NFL. Like, uh-huh. I mean, you got to strike while it's hot. You got to right. strike yeah. while it's yeah. hot and build that brand and yep. just go ahead and run with it. So so that's is super important.
Absolutely.
Okay, so let's talk about, so you said you and Dion met in college, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right, I got to hear the story from your perspective because we all know men and women have different ones.
Very different. Very different. So I remember, like the way I remember it was like a lot of the guys that were on the football team, they hung out at the Fountain, like on Miami's campus. That's where like all the football players mm-hmm. hang out. And okay. I used to purposely avoid walking that way because I feel weird. I don't like yeah. people trying to talk to me. I get real like awkward when guys trying to speak to me. And I just, and especially if it's a group of guys, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, yeah. it's just yeah. like, yeah. okay, like I just don't know what
it's
y'all saying.
It's kind of intimidating.
It's so intimidating. I think guys don't realize that. And I'm just like, you know, but all my communication classes were straight through the middle of campus. Yeah. So I would be like, damn, like, do I want to walk all the way around? And then I still got to kind of walk that way anyway. Anyway, so he would see me and then he ended up finding me mm-hmm. On Instagram. And so this okay. is like uh-huh. the early days of Instagram before it was like Influencer Central and like, you know, uh-huh. cookie cutter images. So I remember he was like under my comments and he would like be putting emojis under my comments. And then like one day he was like, yeah, we should hang out. He's like, yeah, like, you know, send me your number and we'll hang out one day. And I'm just like, he was a sophomore at the time. And I was, uh-huh. well, he was a freshman. And I was a junior because he's 2 years behind me. And I was
these
like,
cougars for me, girl. I see cougars.
Like, I was like, who is this? Who is this child? I'm like, who is this child trying to talk to me? Because, you know, your junior year, you hustling. Yeah. You trying to get yeah. things together. I'm like, senior year is coming almost up. Done. Like, yeah, yes. I'm almost done. I came to Miami to have fun, but I really came to handle business in terms yeah. of, like, you know, doing stuff on mm-hmm. campus. So I was busy all the time. And I was also working. Because mm-hmm. I tell you mm-hmm. something about my mama was like, look, if you're going to go switch schools and you ain't going to be running, girl, you're going to be doing something. So
right,
you better find you a job. So.
Yeah.
So that's I was going to class. Yeah, I was going to class. I was working and I was doing stuff on like for student media. So I was always busy. Mm-hmm. And so I remember, you know, us hanging out. I think our first date was like at like Chipotle. Like he took me like somewhere off campus and went to Chipotle one time. And then my husband's originally from Miami. So he's like real, oh, okay. real foul, right?
Okay,
so
okay.
Once he got comfortable, he took me down south to Paran. Now, I know a lot of people don't know about Paran, but I'm going to tell you right now. I'm gonna tell you right now, it ain't the Miami you see on TV, okay? And I remember him taking me down there, and we had some of the best food. It was like we had fried conch and like ribs, and it was like the shadiest place ever. It was like at this gas station. I did not get out the car.
But it was bomb, though.
It was bomb. I remember I did not get out the car. I locked the car door because I'm from New York, and I'm looking around, and I'm just like, oh no, this ain't even my hood. I was like, let me lock this door right here. I was like, these your people. So if you outside, you might be all right.
Right. Looking at me like fresh meat. Let me
right. And they're like, who is this?
That is hilarious.
So yeah, so he ended up taking me there, and then honestly after that he kept feeding me, and I just kept coming back, child. And that was big. Took me around his family, we hung out, we loved to go to the movies, and I always joke to people and I say that, like, you know, I thought that because he was so young, I figured like, oh, like he's not gonna be interested. Like, I'm gonna be going off to, you know, work in real life. He's got football and he's got school. Child, he stuck around. He ain't go nowhere. He just stayed there, and almost 10 years later, we're still together. So
that's right.
That is okay. Awesome.
So you said. So I know you started working in Kansas. He was drafted to Chicago. Mm-hmm. I know, other than it being a small, Kansas being more of a smaller market, I'm sure that is what really pushed you out. But how did you come to the decision? It's like, okay, I'm going to stop doing what I'm doing here in KC and move here with, or it's not KC, but Lawrenceville, and move to Chicago.
I think for me, it was, you know, we had a long distance relationship for 2 years. And at that point, I think we were just ready to be in the same city. And so I was ready to, like, you know, I had that experience under my belt, the 2 years working as an anchor, working as a reporter. I had gotten promotions. I had, you know, gotten my feet wet in so many different things. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to have to take the leap of faith and go to Chicago without a job and just hustle and look for a job. And I remember even before, you know, moving to Chicago, you know, I was reaching out to people on LinkedIn. You know, I was trying to get through, you know, contacts, like people that I knew that worked in the industry. I remember I went to NABJ, National Association of Black Journalists, their conference that year in D.C.
I heard those conferences are lit.
It's very lit. it is very lit. And I remember that was my very first one. And I'm going to tell y'all, I was so broke at that time that I had to take my tax return to just get my flight to go out there. And I stayed on my homegirl's couch that lived in Southeast D.C. and just had her drive me to the hotel in the morning so I could just stay there all day. So
I mean, that makes sense to me.
Yeah. Like, I'm just like, you know, I'm like, you got to do what you got to do.
That's
at that
right.
point, you know, I'm looking for a job. And, you know, I just left, you know, working in Kansas and having a salary, even though it wasn't much, but it was a job and it was experience for me to kind of build off of. So, a lot of it was hustling, you know, a lot of it was making connections. A lot of it was letting people know, like, my story, my background, like, you know, what I'm doing in Chicago, what I'm interested in. And it's crazy because one of my sorority sisters, she was with me. And she was like, yeah, you should go over to the Fox booth and, you know, see, like, you know, Fox Sports has any openness. I'm like, girl, ain't nobody trying to hire me from Kansas, child, to work at nobody Fox. And then, crazy enough, I end up running into a researcher that worked at the Big Ten Network because they're also under Fox. And he was like, hey, we're looking for a correspondent. You know, send me your stuff and I'll forward it if you just moved to Chicago. Like, we need somebody like ASAP. And so that's how I ended up, you know, getting connected to the Big Ten Network. They saw my work. And Quentin Carter, who is their coordinating producer, I think still to this day, like, he took a chance on me and, you know, allowed me to have that opportunity. And that was huge. I felt like that changed the trajectory of, you know, me being in the sports industry and kind of being also on a national level, because that doesn't happen very often at 24, 25 years old.
Yeah.
And so I look at that and I'm just like, that's not anything but God's alignment, you know, in that time and being in the right place at the right time and connecting with the right people. So
good.
So yeah, that's how I ended up in Chicago and then getting that job at Big Ten Network.
Yeah.
You know, that is so true what you say when you talk about, you know, God's alignment and you hustling so hard. Like, first of all, you come from New York, so you already have the hustling mentality, right?
Yeah.
And, but you keep going and you keep hustling knowing that God's going to open the right doors for you. And like, it was just like, if you would have just been like, oh, I'm not going to do it anymore, you would have never had that opportunity, right? So you just kept going. And that, I think for a lot of people, they miss that part. They miss the hustling and that person that keeps putting one foot in front of the other until that door does open. So That is a great story that you shared for sure.
Yeah, you got to put that work in as well. And I tell people all the time, like I have a lot of young college students that, you know, will ask me, you know, about my path. And I'm like, you know, I'm going to be honest. Everybody's path is not the same. And sometimes it's just tailored to the situation that you're in that brings you to a certain relationship. It brings you to, you know, a certain opportunity. But if you keep putting the work in and you keep lining the things up and building those blocks, then, you know, the door will open. The appropriate door is going to open specifically for you.
Absolutely. So we know about the world of TV, right? And we know that there's the ups and downs, the turns, the lefts, the rights. Tell us about a time in your career where, like, you had a hardship and it, like, really, you grew from that. Like, what is something that's happened to you?
I would say, like, in terms of, like, the TV world, I would say that that space between... So there was a time between when I was at the Big Ten Network and working at BET Networks. And then even my time working at BET also, because it was something so different from for me. It was something where, you know, I didn't plan that move. And that also took me away from Chicago, which means it took me away from, you know, my husband. And, you know, I end up having to be back home in New York with my mom for about like 2 years or so, I want to say. And out of the sports industry. So my contract had ended with Big Ten Network. And, you know, I was going back to New York because I was like, I got to make money. I was like, and my husband knows that's just how I am, you know, regardless of him being, you know, an NFL player. And I think that, you know, he respects that a lot about me is the fact that, you know, I still want to go and get my own. Like, this, my family has sacrificed too much for me to just sit back and, you know, just be like, all right, whatever, like, I'm going to just settle. And so I've always had that fire kind of, you know, in my spirit to continue to do what I want to do and follow my passions. And so that took me to New York. And I was actually freelancing on a project for the Rucka tournament in New York. And so it's crazy because I was actually watching TV and I was like, oh, I could do that. And I end up emailing them the same day. And I was like, hey, like, are y'all looking for like any other correspondents? And they was like, yeah, just come down, like take the train up to, you know, 135th and, you know, we'll see you there. And I was like, oh, bet. Like, and like, that's how New York is though. New York is so random like that. And they're just like, you know, if you feel like you can do it, like pull up and we'll see what you got. And so I end up doing it. And I was on the broadcast, like for ESPN doing the Rucka tournament. And one of the producers, he was actually a producer also at Hot 97 and BET. And so we ended up kind of hitting it off. And he was like, he's like, you know, they're looking for a correspondent at BET Networks. And I thought to myself at the time, I was like, ah, you know, I'm really looking for sports. Like, that's my bread and butter. Like, that's what I really love. But, you know,
your comfort zone.
Yeah, that's my comfort zone. And then I was like, you know what? Let me go ahead and try and see, you know, what this entertainment thing is about, because obviously, like, I follow entertainment, like, that's a part of sports, like, that's something that's natural. So I said, you know, I'll go and do the audition. I ended up going to do the audition, got the job, and it was great. It was honestly a really great, unexpected experience. Like, I got, I got to do red carpets, the VMAs, like, I've done world premieres, traveled to London, Paris. Like, it was, it got surreal at a point where I was just kind of like, how is this like my life? Like, you would tell me at, I'm like, how you would have told me at 18 that, you know, I'm on the red carpet with Tom Cruise in Paris with, you know, the Eiffel Tower as my backdrop. I'd have been like, you're tripping. Like, there's no way. There's no way. That's crazy. But I think that also, you know, it taught me that being able to pivot and being open to different things, like you start to discover new things about yourself. You start to discover and unlock, you know, different strengths and skills that you have. And I think that's what I learned through that experience, because it was tough being, again, away from my husband. But I think that was also a time where those challenges helped build new things within me. It helped me to, you know, exercise new skills, and it helped me to just be better all around as a broadcaster, not just pigeonholing myself into one thing, but also showing that I could do a variety. I could do a variety of different things. So that was like a challenge that turned into like, oh, like, you got a lot of different things in your, and even to this day, I mean, I'm speaking to executives and I talk to people at different networks and they're just like, your background is like one of the most diverse backgrounds I've ever seen. Like, it's crazy. It's like, honestly, it's wild. But I think that comes with just embracing different challenges and being able to learn how to pivot and, you know, being comfortable with being uncomfortable.
That's good.
Okay, so I'm going to come back to you and your husband living apart and like what that does to you and your mm-hmm. career and things of that nature. But so I'm in the middle of reading or listening to Jemele Hill's book.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And she tells the story of how she's at ESPN at this point and she's doing her new show, like The Ride Along. And the first interviewee, she uses the term baby mama. And when and she's thinking like this interview is going so well, like yada, yada, yada. And her boss thought it went well, too. But then the boss's boss was like, this is a problem, basically. Because mm-hmm. she was like, they wanted to tap into the younger voice and have, you know, a more diverse team. But when she was doing that and being her authentic self, it was a problem because they wanted mm-hmm. to maintain some sort of the air of conservativeness. Yeah. Do you, I would assume you wouldn't have that problem going like in BET and things of that nature, but mm-hmm. did you feel like you were kind of like a fish out of water going into the Big Ten Network or whatever, like feeling like you couldn't be your true authentic self or couldn't use, you know, the terminology that you would usually yeah. normally use or what comes natural? Yeah.
I think that early on in my career, especially when I made that leap to the Big Ten Network and it being my first national opportunity, I was very careful about mm-hmm. what I said. And I think that's because, you know, one, I was young. And of course, you have that mindset of, you know, I'm so lucky to be here.
You gotta be a certain way. Yeah.
And you feel like, okay, mm-hmm. like I have to fit, you know, exactly whatever it is that they had previously mm-hmm. or before, mm-hmm. what they're used to. Like I have to be that kind of person. And, mm-hmm. you know, I think once I left the Big Ten Network, you know, there were some things that were happening just internally. And, you know, you get older and you become more comfortable with who you are. You also become mm-hmm. more comfortable because you're getting better at your job. You're more knowledgeable. You know, you're starting to get a little bit more experience. And when mm-hmm. I made that turn to BET Networks, I think that kind of helped with my confidence. Also being mm-hmm. around people that looked like me, being around people that speak yeah. like me, it didn't make yeah. me feel like, oh, well, she's being ghetto or she, you know, yeah. she's a little yeah. much. And I'm going to yeah. tell you, like I said, you know, I'm from Brooklyn and I'm really from around the way. Like I'm from Flatbush and I speak uh-huh. with a little in my neck, you know, sometimes I put a little bass in my voice, you know, and real people talk. Just know, I'm just saying that that's how I am. And people mm-hmm. I think have grown to learn that, yeah, like she's sweet, she's nice, she's smart. But don't piss her off because,
that's
you know,
right. don't
it's a little, it's going to get yeah. a little spicy, you know? Right. And so I think that's what that experience at BET taught mm-hmm. me. And just like you said, Latoya, the representation, I think, was very important. Mm-hmm. Seeing Black producers, seeing Black mm-hmm. EPs, mm-hmm. seeing Black vice presidents, you know, mm-hmm. seeing Black DPs. Like, it was a totally yeah. different experience than anything I've ever had. And so once I left BET and went to Stadium in Chicago, which was also a more relaxed environment, I felt good being myself. Mm-hmm. Like, that's I remember, right. like, me and my co-host, mm-hmm. Michael Felder, and he was our college football analyst. I remember before our first show, like, we were blasting, like, Dreams and Nightmares, like, in the makeup room.
Before
we debuted on our first show. And over time, I just grew more comfortable with just being myself. Yeah. And then mm-hmm. after a while, you're just like, hey, look, like, I know what I'm talking about. You know, I know I'm a good mm-hmm. journalist. I know I'm a great host. I know what I bring to the table. You know, if you feel like the way my hair looks, or if you feel like the way my attitude is, or you feel like, you know, something that I say is maybe not what you thought, or maybe, mm-hmm. you know, something mm-hmm. you don't like, then we just don't align. And the older yeah. I get, the more I understand that that's okay. Like, you don't have yeah. to be everybody's cup of tea. Everybody is yep. not going to like you. And that's yes. fine. But you are going to find a spot where you are going to be the perfect fit for what they are looking for, whether it be whatever yeah. network outlet, you're going to be the perfect fit for somebody else. So you don't have to try and mm-hmm. be like who you see maybe on TV or who was there yeah. before mm-hmm. or what you think the expectation is. Just show up yeah. as yourself. You're one of one. You don't got to be mm-hmm. anybody else. That's and I good. Think that's the evolution that I've had over the last, you know, several years in my career yeah. is that you start to blossom and really realize that, you know, no one else can be like you. You don't have to be like mm-hmm. anybody else.
That's so good.
And they are lucky to have you. Because mm-hmm. mm-hmm. I know you mentioned a part of being like, oh, I'm just excited to be here. Yeah. Like, I'm excited that y'all gave me this opportunity. And there's, yes, of course, there's gratitude, blah, 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 whatever. But at the end of the day, like, y'all are lucky to have me mm-hmm. representing you in this space. So,
mm-hmm. yeah. Especially most of the time when you're like the only, like, mm-hmm. Black woman in that space. And that's been yeah. something, you know, that I've dealt with over the last several years. When I am the mm-hmm. old man, I honestly, yes. I don't like it that way, because I wish there were more Black women, yep. Black yes. men, Latino women, Latino mm-hmm. men, people of different backgrounds in these spaces, so that you don't feel like, oh, well, now I feel like I have to be the voice for everybody. Now I feel like I gotta be, you know, then it's like you're the one type of Black girl that, you know, they gotta have on the show. And so, and that's a whole nother conversation, but, you know, it's, that's something that needs to be dealt with as well.
Yes, I agree. You know, okay, so I was thinking about everything you're saying and being on air and all these, you know, you have to deal with so much mentally. You can't just go, you know, to your job and just know exactly what they expect of you. You have all these other things that you have to check off as well. And I think that, to your point, that's what you're saying. Like, you can't, you don't really want to be authentically you, because at some points you have to be who they want you to be, but then you have to think about other people watching you and what they're going to think. And then you have to think about, you know what I mean? There's so many layers to what you have to endure. But I'm a digress for a minute, because I want to know, we had a Nichelle Turner on, and we asked her this, and it was one of the funniest moments for me. I said, what is a hilarious moment on air, or most embarrassing moment on air, that you can think about, that's something that happened when you're like, oh my gosh, let me tell you.
Oh my gosh. I don't know if I've had, honestly, I'm trying to think if I've had like a really like embarrassing moment, like on TV. It's like, sometimes you'll say things and you don't know also like what offends people and what, especially like now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Like, and that's like a thing for me. I'm like, okay, I don't want to offend anybody. I don't want to say nothing crazy, but like, you know, like sometimes you just like I said, you just don't know, you know, sometimes you might just be, you know, how you speak in your own like circles as something that might be funny. And then it comes out naturally like on TV, and then you just be like, was I supposed to say it? Can I say that? I'm like, I don't know. Let's just act like I did say that. Let's just keep going.
Hopefully they breeze right past it.
I'm like, y'all just don't replay that in the morning. Let's just skip that episode. Like, y'all just, I'll go to my producer and be like, did you hear that?
Edit that out.
Yeah, just make sure we edit that out and we're going to replay it in the morning. But I haven't had like any like super embarrassed, like knock on wood, because it's a child.
I was about to say. Yeah. Yes.
That's a good thing, though. That's a good thing. I feel like, you know, you never know, in the sense of like what someone's experience. If they said something, they're like, I may shouldn't have said that, but we going to ride with it.
That's when I go real quick and I'm like, all right, let's move on.
Let's move on. Move on.
I'm like, let's switch gears and let's talk about the game.
Okay, I do want to circle back to like you and your husband living apart. So I know when you left BET, you went back to Chicago. So you all had that time. But now you're in Boston and he's still in Chicago. So like, how is this working now? Because now you're like well into your career, you know?
Yeah. So like, like initially, you know, we make these decisions together. I think that that's first and foremost. I think that, you know, that's very important for like us to be on the same page. And, you know, when I got this job over a year ago here in Boston, I remember, you know, sitting with my husband and talking to him about it, because he was also in somewhat of his last year in Chicago. We knew that he could go, you know, elsewhere. And so, you know, my whole thing is, you know, when I speak to him, it's like, you know, if the Arizona Cardinals one day say, hey, you got to move to Arizona, that's what's going to happen. You know, like you gotta make the move. If you got to go to LA, if you got to go to Seattle, like no one ever questions, you know, the man and what he has to, no one ever questions that's the man and what he has to do. You know, everybody's always looking at me and they're just like, well, how are you going to handle it? Well, why nobody asking him? I'm like, why don't nobody ask him how he going to handle being without me? Because I'm going to tell you something, he need me.
Real talk. Say it with your chest out.
I'm like, hold on now. Let me get this straight. Yeah, hold on now. But yeah, we had that conversation together, and I, like, this is why, you know, one of the many reasons why I love my husband so much is that he's just as invested in, you know, my goals and my dreams and my career as I am. And so I remember when we looked at the opportunity, he was saying, you know, this is like a really great franchise for you to be a part of, like for you to be covering, you know, you're talking about the Patriots and the Celtics, that's always in the national eye, you know, this would be a really great opportunity for you, you know, and of course, you know, he's looking at it, he's like, well, how much they pay too.
So, look, is it worth it?
Is it worth it? You know what I'm saying?
Look at this benefit package.
Okay, exactly. So, but yeah, we were on the same page as, you know, with each other on that. And we just, you know, we knew it would be tough, but we also know that we've done it before and we've made it work before. And so a lot of it is, you know, committing to making sure that, you know, we're seeing each other, that we're going back and forth, that, you know, I'm supporting him, he's supporting me. I mean, like a good example of that is, you know, like last season I was covering the NBA finals and, you know, his season had finished and he was traveling back and forth with me, you know, while I was covering like the Celtics playing like the Warriors, and he stayed with me for weeks on end, you know, while I went back and forth, you know, coming to games during the playoffs and everything like that. And I always tell people it's, you got to have the right person. You know, because it's not easy. It's very hard. And people ask me all the time, like, you know, how do you do it? You know, how do y'all go back and forth and, you know, not seeing each other for like a week or 2 weeks? And I'm just like, it's tough. You know, it's a lot of FaceTime. But we also know what the end goal is. So we also know that this is not forever.
This ain't forever.
And so we're okay with sacrificing if it means that it's setting up for something bigger for not only me and him, but also our kids and then our kids' kids and, you know, setting up like our family to, you know, to be in a position where, you know, they can start with a head start, which is something we didn't have. You know? And I think that's the big, that's the bigger picture. The bigger picture is making sure that, you know, you're laying the foundation and the groundwork for your family to be good, you know, not when, you know, only you're here, but beyond after you're here. And so I think that's a lot of what our focus is, especially in our early on years. Like, it's okay to grind and it's okay for it to be a little bit hard, but later on, it's going to pay off. So, so it's tough, but you know, you make it work. And, you know, I feel like when you have the right partner, that's huge. That's a big thing. You know, I make sure I go out there and I support him and I go to games, I go to training camp and all that and whatever I can do with my schedule and vice versa. You know, he makes sure that if he has a bye week or if he's off or, you know, he's got an off day or if his season finishes early, then he could come and support me here while I'm still doing basketball. So it's a lot of give and take.
And albeit as you may, it's not, you guys are both athletes, so you understand the grind about that. And it's kind of nice that, like, you can go to football and support him, and then he can turn around and come watch basketball. I mean, it's a good balance if you really ask me.
Look, I tell you, he was not disappointed when he was going to playoff games, okay? He was real happy. He was like, so how about them tickets? He was like, what you gonna do about them tickets? You got some tickets that you get? I'm like, child, all right, calm down.
It's a win-win, let's be clear.
I will say, I do admire, I admire women like you, women that continue to pursue their passions and figure it out, right? Because to be completely honest, like when I got pregnant, I moved to Detroit where my husband was drafted. I didn't feel like there was a way for me to like do it all and still pursue what I wanted to pursue, when in all actuality it was, and like you were living proof of that. So, and I see like Debbie Brown, I don't know if you are familiar, Debbie Brown's husband used to play. And I remember when they came to Seattle, she was like, all right, I'll see y'all next Thursday. And I'm like, where are you going? She's like, oh, I got to work. I'm going back to LA. I have stuff to do. And I was like, I love seeing that, because people always tell you, you have to change. You have to give up what's important to you to for them to pursue whatever, especially if they're making that amount of money or whatever. But in all actuality, we could all pursue what's important to us and what is important for, to your point, the end goal. So I love it.
And like I said, it's tough, but you know, when you have your mind focused on the end goal, and you know, also I'm a big believer in just trusting in God's plan. And every time I worry and I think that I have control over a situation, God just shows me like, girl, chill out.
Bye.
Like, sis, you don't you don't really know what's going on right here. And that's a lot. That's really a lot of my life. Like when people ask me, like, how are you doing it? It's only by the grace of God, y'all. I'm going to tell y'all right now. It really is. Like, because even right now, like, I'm pregnant with our first child. Like, our baby is due, like, on Super Bowl Sunday.
So congratulations.
Thank you.
That is like, amazing.
We're so excited. But a lot, like I said, a lot of this is just trusting in God, trusting in his plan, and knowing that it's going to work out the way that it's supposed to work out. Like, so we can freak out all we want about, you know, not being in the same place and trying to go back and forth and how are we going to do it. But, you know, we got like really great people in our corner, you know, family, friends, and of course, like people that want to help. So it's just, you know, a lot of it is just trusting in God and knowing that it's going to work out the way it's supposed to.
That's so good. Yes. Tell us something that you could, I guess some advice you could share with another female that's interested in pursuing the television career. Maybe something that you learned along the way that you did not know or something that they would need to know as they embark on this new journey.
I would say embarking on this journey, one, like to be open. Like, I think that a lot of people come in with this set idea of what it's like being in TV and it being like glamorous and you get makeup, you get outfits, you get your hair done. Child, that is no.
It gets old real quick.
I'm about to say, not for a very long time. Okay. A lot of people is not doing that. Okay. A lot of it is hard work. And a lot of people that I came in with are not here anymore. You know, it's very few people who are still standing and are still doing this and are still pursuing this. And that's because, you know, a lot of people think they're cut out for the work that you have to do and the sacrifices that you have to make in order to be in this business. And a lot of people, once they realize and they get into it, it's like, oh, no, this is a little bit too much for me. So I would say, like, you know, making sure that it's really what you want to do, but also being able to, you know, to pivot and be open to different things. A lot of people that I come across, they want to be on camera. That's like the most popular thing, you know, because it's what people see. But, you know, I've worked in the control room. I've worked as a camera operator. I've worked as a producer. I've worked as a writer. Like, I've done all different things behind the camera before I've gotten in front of the camera. And I think those are just as valuable, if not equally or more important, you know, than just being able to get up on TV and speak and say what you got to say. So, I would say being able to pivot, being able to be open to different things. I think that's huge, because a lot of people are just set on one thing and it's just like, don't put yourself in a box. I'm telling you, doing as much as you can will open up doors for opportunities that you wouldn't even think that you would have in front of you.
Yeah. Okay. So I have to ask you, the temperature in Boston since the fallout with Coach Udoka, and then you know, we had the whole situation with the Spurs and Primo.
So like, child, I tell you, one thing I learned about the NBA, because I used to do a lot of, like, football has always been, you know, from high school up into college and NFL, like, that's been, you know, my focus for a while. And then, like, a couple years ago, I switched over to the NBA, you know, doing a show in Chicago. And I tell you right now, I don't know a league with more drama. And then, I mean, they got drama like the Real Housewives of Atlanta, because I just don't understand. Every time I wake up, it's something. Real talk. I'm just like, look, I'm like, y'all can't take a rest. I'm like, this, it's always some tea.
They be talking about the NFL, but listen.
For real.
It's always some tea happening in the NBA.
They don't call it the Boston Teacup for nothing.
I mean, like, come on. I'm like, what is going on? I was literally telling one of my co-hosts yesterday, we were talking about the Celtics, and I was just like, honestly, like, you would think that, you know, once we got through, like, towards the end of the offseason, everything was, like, kind of calm. Like, he wasn't really hearing anything. Yeah. Like, people had gone on vacation. And then literally, like, 2 weeks before the season started, I was like, I remember because I couldn't sleep because the baby was like kicking and doing his thing, and I was just like, all right, this is what we gonna do. I'm gonna be up at 4 a.m. and I guess I'm gonna just be looking at Twitter. I look at Twitter, I see this story, I said, oh, this is gonna be bad. I was like, this is gonna be something that we're gonna be talking about for the whole entire year. And that was before the suspension came down. That was before like anything really happened. I was like, this is gonna be crazy. But I mean, I always say there's never a dull moment, especially in Boston, with like it being such a crazy sports town. Like, people are uber dedicated to, like, they love, when I tell you they love their sports teams here. Like, they are very, I'm talking about, I go to Trader Joe's and people are stopping me and they're just like, oh, you're the sports lady, right? Well, let me tell you something. I'm like, well, hold on now.
Like, I'm not on the clock right now.
Yeah, I'm like, well, wait a minute.
Off duty, off duty.
But I enjoyed it, though. I love how enthusiastic people are. Like, yeah. I remember last year I had actually, I had the flu and I had missed like 2 games. And like, fans are like, you know, tweeting me and they're just like, where are you? We need you. Like, we're in the middle of the play. We need you here. I'm like, I'm not playing, y'all. I'm not putting up no minutes. I'm putting no points
that's
up.
Sweet, though. They are mean. Boston fans are mean. So if they like you and they miss you.
That's what I tell people all the time. Because, you know, again, being from New York and coming to Boston, for me, it was kind of like, ooh, I don't know. Yeah, like, this is you know, a little crazy. This ain't really my territory. And, you know, I will say, though, about Boston fans, when they mess with you, they mess with you. They're super loyal. They love you. They are, like, some of the most dedicated people I have ever come across in my lifetime working in sports. Now, if they hate you, Cheryl, I don't know what to tell you.
It is what it is. It is what it is. Take that L.
Can you stay over there? I'm going to stay over here.
Once you take cross that on L. the other side, it's a little dangerous, okay? I just tell people all the time, I'm like, look, they love really hard, and if they dislike you, they hate really hard too.
Yeah,
like that's just how I go. There is no gray area. There is no middle ground here.
Shout out to the Boston fans. Real talk. Legit. Okay, I want you to. Who is someone in your career that you've aspired or looked up to?
I mean, so many people. I would say, like, Kerry Champion for me, like, coming up in college. Yeah, like that was huge for me. Like, I love watching her. You know, do what she did when she was on SportsCenter, when she was on First Take.
She killed it.
She, I remember just watching her in college and I was just like, dang, like, I absolutely love her. The first time I met her, I was like a little starstruck because I was just like,
fangirled out a little bit.
Fangirled out a little bit.
Kerry has a way of making you feel like y'all just been sisters, like, forever.
When we had her on the podcast, it was literally one of my favorite interviews because, like, to Tia's point, you feel like you've known her forever, but she's so relatable. It's just like, it's so rare. And so I completely understand that.
And I love the confidence that she has about her. Like, she's just like, you know, like, I know I'm that girl. And I'm just like, you know what? Energy. Okay. Yes.
Right? She'd be like, energy. I deserve.
Yes.
I
deserve. I'm like, you know what? Because sometimes, yes. Because,
luxury.
No, seriously, because sometimes we have that mindset, like I mentioned earlier, about being, oh, I'm so lucky and I have, you know, I feel like, you know, I have to be this way. I think watching her evolve throughout her career has also just kind of showed me and just been an example of, like, you know, it's okay to be yourself and it's okay to be in your bag. Like, it's all right to say that you. It's all right to say that you doing your thing. And I honestly love that about her. It's so admirable because you just don't see it that often. It's nothing wrong with obviously like being humble, but sometimes, you know, you gotta be like, I know what I bring to the table, you know? And along with like Harriet Champion, like Robin Roberts, like I love watching her, you know, I love people who are just great storytellers, like who are just, they have substance. Because I think that sometimes, especially in this age of like social media, like, and people being personalities, like there's no depth, like there's no type of, you know, substance when it comes to what people bring to the table. So I really admire when somebody is able to, you know, kind of hone in on their craft and be a professional in their craft. Love. And you can really tell that, you know, that they've done the work, that they're not just here just to be here, but that they're actually bringing something to the table other than just being a face or just, you know, saying something for surface level impact.
Yes, that's so good. Okay, tell us who you want to meet one day. Who do you want to meet? Who is somebody you like? I want to meet her one day. One day I'm going to meet her.
Does it have to be somebody
him.
Like...
It could be him or her.
It could be whoever you want.
Him or her. Does it have to be like somebody in like media or just like... Nope. Oh, like in general? Like y'all, I mean, I'm a big like Beyonce fan. I might pass out if I meet Beyonce. Like I just...
The queen.
Just, you know... And it's not even, you know, on some just like, oh, I love her music. Like, I love her work ethic. Like, I mean, if y'all can't tell, like, I love people that, again, have depth. Yeah. And I feel like Beyonce, like her depth and the work that she puts in and being a perfectionist, like one is relatable for me because I feel like that's how I am with my work. Like just tirelessly trying to be better and to be 1% better every single day. Like I love watching the documentaries of her, you know, working on shows or working on an album. Like those are like my favorite things to watch because it's just like people don't understand like the work, the blood, the sweat, the tears that you have to put into something to make it the best product as possible. And I think a lot of people also, you know, I think a lot of people also don't put that work in and they don't, you know, they leave it to other people. Yeah. They leave it to other people to kind of just, you know, dictate what it should look like, what it should sound like. And I love just me being a hands-on person. I love seeing people who are great at their craft be hands-on at something. People who like care about what they're putting out there, care about the message, they care about the impact. Like those things are important to me. So I would say like definitely a Beyonce out there, not just for the music and for the swag and just for who she, but just the work ethic. Like I remember I made my husband watch Homecoming with me when it first came out. And I think he even earned like a whole level of respect for her. Respect. He was like, oh, damn. Like, he's like, I didn't know she was doing it like this. And I was like, I've been telling you.
Right?
I've been telling you forever.
Have you not been listening? Have you not been listening?
I've been telling you forever. I'm like, she is killing this. He was like, he was like, all right, calm down. But but yeah, I would say Beyonce is definitely on that list for me of people that, you know, to have just a real conversation with her and meet her.
Yeah. I mean, shout out to B.
She's
one of one.
I mean, right after I get up from passing out, child.
Right. I'd be like, girl, get up. This is your moment. Get up.
Okay. So let's switch gears a little bit and play a little game.
Okay. The 2 minute drill. Okay. Okay, so we're going to give you options. We already know this first question because we ended with it. So. But we're going to start there and work our way down. We're just going to ask you questions. It's going to be this or that, or it's going to be the other where you fill in the blank. Okay? All right, 2 minute drill. We already said this one. Well, you already answered it. Okay. We put Beyonce or Rihanna? Beyonce.
Oh, obviously. Beyonce. I love Rhi, though, because she's from Barbados. But yeah, I'm going to have to pick Beyonce on this one.
Okay, what is something you are really proud of, but you rarely get a chance to discuss it?
Ooh, we're really proud of, but rarely get a chance to discuss it. I would say even just like the whole Emmy situation. Like, I'm so very proud of that. Maybe that's just top of mind. But like, you know, like when you first, like it's my first Emmy and like, I feel like sometimes it's like weird. I'm like, oh, is it like weird for me to talk about that? And I'm just like, nah, that's not weird. That's not weird at all. Like, me winning that first Emmy for our Patriots pregame live, like, that's something I am very, very, very proud of.
You should be, because think about it. A lot of people have worked for so long in this industry and have never won an Emmy. So, girl, listen, I want to give you all the flowers. Take this moment to be proud. Listen. You know, that's awesome.
Yeah, I'm so proud of that. Like, it's just, that was like one of my goals. And I remember, like, just a quick story behind that. I remember working at my first job and one of my news directors telling me at the time, you know, oh, well, you know, that doesn't mean anything if you get that. And like, kind of basically trying to downplay it. Like, you know, I should have
won the Emmy.
Yeah, like, I shouldn't want to like get it, or, you know, like, I wouldn't get it. And, you know, that's always kind of been in the back of my mind. And then once I found out I was nominated, I was just like, I was like, oh, wait a minute. Nah, sis, this is. This is a thing right here. I'm like, this is something to be very, very proud of. My mom was literally like, my mom cried, and she is just like, my mom is, she was over the moon, excited. She tells everybody about it. She is proud. My family is so proud. My husband's proud. Everybody is just.
Let me introduce you to my daughter, my Emmy
award winning daughter.
Okay.
Okay, look, we done blew this 2 minute drill, so we'll just ask you two more questions. Do you have any cravings?
Ooh, cravings. I love spicy, like jalapenos. That's for me. Oh my gosh. And it's so bad because like it doesn't end well, but jalapenos for sure.
That does not end well.
Okay.
What acid reflux is real, okay?
It is.
Oh, so actually now it's two more questions. But what are your thoughts on nepotism?
Ooh, nepotism. I mean, bad. I think negative. I think awful when I think of nepotism.
It just, why?
Because it just reminds me of like, it reminds me of an internship that I had in college. And I remember that I was literally the only person who was not related to somebody at the company. And I was like, well, what the hell is going on here? I'm like, people out here applying to these damn internships and y'all giving it to nieces and nephews.
No. Okay, fair. But listen, you and your husband are building an empire. You mean to tell me you ain't gonna give preferential treatment to your kids?
I mean, I will if it's my empire. Yeah, you're right. For sure I'm gonna give my nieces and nephews and my children, you know, I'm gonna give them some favor. But I'm also, you know, on the other
hand. But they still got to work for it.
They still got to work for it. I mean, if you coming in and you just not able to do the job, child, you got to go. I'll tell you one thing about
me.
Well,
that's a different subject.
Yeah, I'll tell you one thing about me. Like, I'm very black and white with it. Either you can do the job or you can't. I don't care who you is.
Yeah. Real talk. Fair. Real talk. And I'm going to tell you the truth. All right. Tell us what's next for Amina.
Ooh, what's next for Amina? What's next for me right now, my biggest focus is family, because obviously we've got a baby on the way. So, you know, my next focus is, you know, trying to balance my career and excelling in that. But then also being a great mom, being a great wife and figuring out what that looks like in my life. And, you know, again, I think that's a part of developing as a woman. Like at first in college, you know, you're so focused on career. And now I'm at this point in my life where I'm like, oh, shoot, I'm going to be somebody's mama.
Who gave this to me?
I'm like, well, hold on. Let me figure out what this is going to look like. But yeah, for me, it's just striking that balance of, you know, being a great mom, being a great wife, while also just pursuing my goals and continuing to elevate them in my career.
Well, we know whatever it is you decide to do, whether it's career, mom, wife, you're going to do well. You are such a hard worker and such an example to so many. And before you go, let everyone know where they can find you.
So on Instagram and Twitter, you can find me at Amina J TV. That's AminaJade TV.
Thank you so much for joining us. It was a pleasure to have you.
Thank you. I appreciate you guys having me.
Okay. Can I just say, I feel like I've known Amina forever. That was so fun.
Yes. Yes, she is so freaking funny. And listen, I'm glad because, you know, she was speaking about Carrie being her favorite, same. But yes. Her really stepping into that more confident space of like, yo, I am an Emmy Award winning host. Yes. Like, you better put some respect on my name. Like, I love to see women like just so proud and excited and really like just doing a damn thing. Like,
yeah. And not being afraid to like put that out there and not, you know, there's this balance, I think, between like people always say, like, be humble, don't and like sometimes
be ladylike,
like,
or whatever.
Yeah, sometimes it's okay to be like, I am an award winning journalist. The end.
Okay? I am the shit. Period.
The end. Like, and that's okay. I'm bragging right now, and I'm proud. But I'll be humble in about 5 minutes. Okay, thank you. So shout out to Amina for just being so inspiring. She's very inspiring, all that she's done, all that she's doing, and now adding a mommy to it. It's so exciting. Yes. So we can't wait to find out when she has little baby boy. So
absolutely,
stay tuned for that, y'all.
Yes.
All right. Well, that's it for Inside Lines Podcast. Make sure to follow us on both Inside Lines Podcast on Instagram and Facebook.
And you can also listen online and share your favorite episodes at InsideLinesPodcast.com. And leave us some recommendations on who else you would like to see. We need some more Aminas, some more just amazing, dope women.
Yes.
Leave us a voicemail at SpeakPipe.com/InsideLines.
Until then, leave it all out on the field. Thanks for listening. And we will see you next time.